to Jay Sekulow. Breaking news. The White House releases phase one of an Israeli-Palestinian peace plan.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
The plan would invest about $50 billion in the region. It would create 1 million jobs in the West Bank and Gaza. It would take their unemployment rate from about 30% to single digits. It would reduce their poverty rate by half.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
What we also want to do is stimulate Jordan, Egypt, and Lebanon, because if you can get that whole region starting to lift and you're able to get, you know, quicker flow of goods, quicker flow of people, and all the different areas that are necessary in industry, instead of, you know, bullets and munitions and war, then I think that will really lead to a big increase in investment in the area and more jobs and better quality of life and hopefully more peace along with it.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hey, everybody. Well, very interesting development over the weekend. That's Jared Kushner, the senior advisor of the president, has announced formally his Peace to Prosperity. This is the economic plan, a new vision for the Palestinian people. This is phase one of a multi-prong approach to Israeli-Palestinian peace. Now, let me tell you something. I've been working in this region for 30 years. We have an office in Jerusalem. In fact, you'll be hearing from David Benjamin, one of our senior counsel in our office in Jerusalem later in the broadcast. But I've been working in this region for a long time. And about 10 years ago, I had the honor of sitting down with Shimon Peres, who was then the president of Israel, for a lengthy discussion at his residence about peace between the Israelis and Palestinians. And he mentioned then, in great detail, the economic impact, water, food, medicine. You're looking at a $50 billion increase or $50 billion investment over a 10-year period into the Palestinian areas. That would be Gaza and the Palestinian, at our West Bank, we call the West Bank, to revitalize the economy, revitalize healthcare, revitalize education, revitalize economic development, put in place safeguards for the rule of law, for contract rights. A prosperous economy will do the most to eliminate terrorism. A people that are healthy tend to not send their children to kill other people's children. It's that simple. Now, initially, Mahmoud Abbas said he would not meet. And then about an hour later, I'm reading you the headline, Abbas says we are ready to return to the negotiating table. And the reason they're ready to return to the negotiating table is they have to. When you're looking at a $50 billion investment coming from a variety of sources, including neighbors, Jordan, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, that impact alone is very, very significant here.
Yeah, those three countries alone that Jared Kushner mentioned, Jordan, Egypt, and Lebanon, we're not going to let Mahmoud Abbas mess this opportunity up for them. They are much more powerful. He oversees a sliver of a territory. They oversee nations. Like Lebanon, Egypt, and Jordan. And with this total plan that will be announced and presented tomorrow in Bahrain, the fact that the U.S. and the Trump administration, which is very pro-Israel, I just want to underscore this, recognize the first president to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Just weeks ago, recognized the Golan Heights as part of the Jewish state of Israel, is able to gather together through the backing of the Gulf states, they've got plenty of money, and will make some of these investments, Egypt and Jordan and Lebanon, to put the pressure on the Palestinians to get back to the negotiating table for money that will never get into the pockets of Mahmoud Abbas. These are business loans, again, investments. This is not a government-to-government grant. It's not like the U.S. is going to be taking your taxpayer dollars and giving $50 billion over to the Palestinian Authority. That needs to be made clear. These will be people that will be applying for loans, for infrastructure, and peace. And peace is ultimately what all Israelis, even the most hawkish Israelis, seek with the Palestinians. They've got bigger issues. They've got Iran to deal with. They've got Hezbollah to deal with and Hamas to deal with. They don't need to be dealing anymore with the West Bank Palestinian Authority. There should be peace there, and economic growth, access to good hospitals, education, and water is the way to get there. So congratulations to the Trump administration for this reversal by Mahmoud Abbas and the Palestinian Authority. We'll talk about it when we come back. Give us a call. Your thoughts, 1-800-684-3110.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
One of the initiative here. This is the Israeli-Palestinian economic plan to peace. Mahmoud Abbas has now said that he will, in fact, meet with the Trump administration, and he will, in fact, meet on a peace plan. And this was after they said initially he was not so inclined to do so. Now it says, Abbas, we're ready to return to the negotiating table. They want a recognition that Israel occupies the East Jerusalem and a vision of a two-state solution. So here's the potential for peace. The economic development starts with this. By developing property and contract rights, so this is, understand what's happening here. These are infrastructure things that have to happen before a dollar is spent. So it will be contract rights, the rule of law, anti-corruption measures, capital markets, pro-growth tax structure, low tariffs with reduced trade barriers. The idea being here, strategic infrastructure investment will then take place to improve the business environment and stimulate private sector growth. And then this is the most important aspect for the people in the Palestinian Authority. Hospitals, schools, homes, and businesses will secure reliable access to affordable electricity, clean water, and digital services. Now, Andy, 10 years ago, you and I sat in an office with Shimon Peres, the then president of Israel, and discussed this exact type of approach.
Yes, I was wondering if you would remember that I was at that meeting also, Jay. It was in Tel Aviv at the president's office. And, you know, I was somewhat almost skeptical, not skeptical really, but I was thinking, what's he talking about when he says maybe if we give them water, they won't kill us? But he knew, and he was a prescient man and a great statesman yep. and a diplomat, and he knew from then that basic and fundamental things such as water, which the Israelis have the grasp on how to produce and to conserve that, is something that is a necessary component to creating a peaceful situation. And I see this as an extension of the vision that Shimon Peres expressed to us that day.
Well, here's what you got. Billions of dollars of new investment will improve, obviously, things like clean water. But also, this is what it says, businesses will have access to capital. The markets of the West Bank and Gaza will be connected with key trading partners, including, and this is interesting, Egypt, Israel, Jordan, and Lebanon. Wes, that's significant, too.
Absolutely. The fact they have buy-in from the Gulf states and the other Arab nations cannot be, you know, overstated. This is a bold, ambitious plan, and the thing I like about it, it is a totally new way of approaching a 60-year-old problem. It's never been addressed this way.
Nope.
In fact, the Palestinian people are suffering. Right now in the Palestinian territories, unemployment is 30%. In the Gaza Strip, it's 50%. This promises 1 million new jobs for Palestinians.
The resulting economic growth has the potential to end the current unemployment crisis, transform the West Bank and Gaza into centers of opportunity. Mm-hmm. That's the next move in this, Harry.
Absolutely. So one of the things that we should keep in mind is that economic growth in the Palestinian Authority arena, as well as Gaza, has been stunted in part by government misrule, and a precondition for the dramatic economic growth proposed by this program is to restructure and reform governance among the Palestinian people. So quintessential components of that include legal reform, property and contract rights, and an independent judiciary. This will help deliver the Palestinian people from misrule by the Palestinian Authority, and it will ensure that economic growth continues without further entrenching the existing Palestinian bureaucracy, which has basically delivered misrule for decades to the Palestinian people. So this is a very, very important initiative. It's a very, very hopeful initiative. And I think we should anticipate change within the Palestinian arena over the next 5 to 10 year period.
All right. So let's look at what we'll take a call in a moment here. But this is, you're talking about a bold initiative. This is after the recognition of Jerusalem as the capital, after the Golan Heights as part of Israel's sovereign territory. And yet the Palestinian Authority has no choice but to go to the table. Why? Because the Lebanese, the Jordanians, the Saudis, the Egyptians are all saying $50 billion in assets, $50 billion in infrastructure for schools and health care. This could revolutionize what's taking place within the Palestinian areas right now.
Yeah, so for the wealthy Gulf states, they're going to be partners with the U.S. in making these investments. So we've got them on board. And then for these countries that need the investments in infrastructure, like Jordan, Egypt, and Lebanon, this would be also countering Hezbollah's influence there. The fact that the Gaza Strip is included. Remember, the Obama administration would say they would be negotiating and they would leave out the Gaza Strip entirely?
Right.
The Trump administration is being very bold here and saying this is going to include the Gaza Strip. So we're going to put in we will invest there. And what will the hope be there? That the people will say, I'm sick of Hamas.
Right.
You know, I want to open up a beachfront hotel because we're on the Mediterranean here on the Gaza Strip. And we could be like Beirut, but a safer Beirut possibly. Or maybe you also improve Beirut as well. So it's a place people return to, not just European kind of adventure tourists, but regular folks who, again, are looking for beautiful places on the Mediterranean, West City it used to be. This is how you get there with this kind of investment. You push out the radicals because this is the test for the people. This is the test for the people. I get that.
Yes.
It's the test for the everyday person on the street. Are you willing to make the concessions to the Jewish state of Israel, which basically means
the
you're
right
going
to
knock
exist.
That off,
right.
Okay, so that you have a much better life and that your children and your grandchildren and their children have a much better life? Are you willing to move past Israel and ignore Iran and ignore some of these radicals? And if the Saudis have bought in, that means they're willing to move on past it. The Egyptians have bought in, they're willing to move on past it. The Lebanese have bought in, they're willing to move on past it. You know they want Hezbollah out of their south. I think this is key, and it would then allow Israel to focus on the major threats, which are Iran and Syria.
Yeah, so here's what you have. I think this is what you got to put in a real perspective here, and this is, I think, fundamentally important. Understand there have been times in the past where there has been great trade and tourism between the Palestinian authorities and Israel, but there's never been this kind of infrastructure investment. And normally when there's been money put in, this is what Professor Hutchins is concerned about, it goes to the United Nations and it never gets to the people. That's not this plan. This plan is not we're writing a $50 billion check, us, the Jordanians, the Saudis, to the United Nations and let us know how it goes. This could end the this would end the refugee camps. You no longer need a refugee camp if you have 100% employment. If you have hospitals and schools and education, and you don't need Hamas and Hezbollah to be supporting that. because you've got private sector funding and the rule of law and all of that put in place to eliminate the need for terrorism. Because let me tell you something. What Andy said is a joke, or a statement that Shimon Peres said, which was, if they're not dehydrated, maybe they won't kill us, is absolutely correct. If there is clean water, which we take for granted in the United States, but in the Middle East is a big deal. The idea that you have clean water, clean education, food, businesses, rule of law, contracts where you can go to court if there's a breach of a contract. Yeah. None of that exists in those territories right now. This type of infrastructure makes a huge difference, Andy, in moving the ball forward. This is a plan to move the ball forward.
It does, and it's a very prescient plan in the sense that whoever was part of putting it together, Jared Kushner and his advisors, really realized that economics is the precondition to ultimate peace. If a person does not have access to a hospital, to a school, to electricity, to water, to housing, to roads and bridges, they're never going to be happy politically. Once you get them happy economically and socially by doing the kinds of things that this peace plan proposes, then they're going to get their minds off killing their neighbors because they're going to have the wherewithal, the economic structure to live in peace among them. Yep. And that's exactly what this plan aims to accomplish.
Let's go to Jerry in Rhode Island. I think it's a great question. Jerry, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Jerry.
Hello, team. The zeal for which all of you are talking about this plan, and we know, listeners know, you've been studying this for several years, and you're referencing back to that 10 years ago with when the guy said basic necessities. And the misuse, here's my question, the misuse of government.
Yep.
I like the fact that we're not going to have the United Nations. There's nothing there. But how do you overcome some of those radical extremists getting to people? You can promise them a lot of these amenities, and it sounds like all of you observers of many years think this has great chance to work.
Because Hamas and Hezbollah, the problem will be when the people are working, when the people are educated, when the people are being fed, when they have gainful employment and their children have a better life. Hamas and Hezbollah, and I'll go to Colonel Smith on this, don't look so attractive.
Absolutely. You know, the people in the Palestinian territories are sick of the corruption and the mismanagement. In the Gaza Strip, they're sick of Hamas planting missile batteries and ammunition warehouses in their schools and in their hospitals. They are tired of this. And I think it's much better to approach this in this new way and to spend money on infrastructure and jobs as opposed to weapons and ammunition, which is what's been going on in the past.
That's what the White House is saying through Jared Kushner. Take a listen, Byte 20.
Everyone cares about the Palestinian cause. We care about the Palestinian cause, and we're trying to help find a solution. People are tired of the way that this has been stuck in the mud for so long. And what we're hoping we can do is get people to look at this a little bit differently, come together, share ideas, and then hopefully we can create a framework on which to move forward economically.
I think it's a brilliant plan.
The key word there is a little, it's different. This is not, Jerry, the plans of the past. I think you're right. The plans of the past were throw money at the problem, and it was siphoned off by corruption, and it just never worked, or through the UN. This is a different way of looking at it. When we come back, David Benjamin joining us from Jerusalem.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad. standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at ACLJ.org.
It's not that we have people watching this broadcast from all over the world, but I just got a text from a friend of ours who's in Dubai right now, a well-known guy who has got tremendous government experience, former official with DHS, and does a lot of economic transactions involving the Arab world. He said, I just said to him, I'm very pleased with the peace plan. I just texted. He said he was watching from Dubai. He said, amen to that. There's great excitement here as well. I think that is the key, that in the region that there is some excitement about starting a peace plan off with an economic incentive that actually makes sense. So we've got David Benjamin, who, not yet, we're trying to get David Benjamin from our office in Jerusalem. Go ahead, Jordan.
No, and that's what those Gulf state leaders, and I think I know who you're talking about, where he is in places like Dubai, they understand influxes of cash resources to build business. They've also been able to do it and get around the corruption. And so I think for them, this speaks their language.
Yep.
Unlike dumping money to the UN, which none of them trust, just like none of us trust, and that money disappears into the hands of mostly UN officials, honestly. The corruption inside there is horrible. Remember with Kofi Annan's son and all of that.
Right.
So bypassing that and go to what is a very U.S. capitalistic model. Go to the private investors. Go to the private businesses. Put the money there where people really have a say and they want to use those resources. They don't want to just take them and steal. They want to build a business that makes more than what they were just given.
Yep. And it's, again, we're joined by now by David Benjamin, senior counsel for the ACLJ in our office in Jerusalem. David knows this region well. He lives there. He's a colonel in the Israeli Defense Forces, a brilliant international lawyer, a good friend. David, your reaction to the this is phase one, the economic aspect of the peace plan.
Well, to me, it should be a no-brainer that economic prosperity should create an atmosphere conducive to advancing the peace process. This, by the way, is something the Palestinians themselves accepted in the Oslo process. There was the Paris Accord in the context of the Oslo Agreement, where the whole idea was to develop the economy between Israel and the Palestinians and thereby promote an atmosphere for peace. And the idea being, which I think is being tested, and is that there's quite a lot of proof that this works, is that poverty and desperation, economic crises drive violence and war. Of course, not necessarily, of course, but in many cases that is the case. So to give an economic boost to the area as a basis for hopefully succeeding in a political settlement down the line, to me is sound logic, which is hard to argue with.
They're talking about, you know, if you look at it, it's and these are things we've talked about: hospital infrastructure, schools, home and business, access to electricity, clean water, and digital services. Like the clean water issue, David, which we tend in the United States take for granted, it is a big issue in the Palestinian Authority. It's a big issue in the Middle East.
It's a huge issue. Some analysts have said that water is actually the issue that is the cause of all the wars in the Middle East. It's a bit of an extreme position, but it's not difficult to see why that should be the case. This is a water-starved area, and the water doesn't always fall or is distributed in an equal manner between the different areas. In fact, if you look at an aerial picture of the Middle East, you'll see Israel is relatively green, but around you'll see desert for the most part. So the issue of water and distributing water, clean water that can be used, is actually very, very fundamental. It's not a side issue. It's a very very major issue for both for the West, for Judea Samaria, and for Gaza. The issue of water, sewerage, water management is crucial. It's a big one.
Let me give you another example to our audience, too. This is part two here. It talks about the second initiative will empower the Palestinian people to realize their ambitions. And it talks about expanding online education platforms, increased vocational and educational training, technical training, international exchanges. But it also says equally important is access to quality health care. It will be dramatically improved as Palestinian hospitals and clinics will be outfitted with the latest healthcare technology and equipment, In addition, new opportunities for cultural and recreational activities will improve the quality of life of the Palestinian people. From parks and cultural institutions to athletic facilities and libraries, this initiative's projects will enrich public life throughout the West Bank and Gaza. David, I made the statement early in this broadcast that the fact is when you've got poverty and despair, and you said the same thing pretty much just a moment ago, that gives a feeding ground for terrorism, for radicalization. When you have a prosperous economy and a populace that is working and that they can look and say, my life is improved and the life of my children will even be better, that is a hallmark on how you bring lasting peace and stability to a country.
I think we have proof for that direction even in our limited area. If you compare the situation now between the Gaza Strip and Judea Samaria, the West Bank, you know, it goes without saying that the Gaza Strip, which has a much more severe economic situation, okay, it's responsible for far more violence, far more conflict, far more agitation than the Judea Samaria, the West Bank, which is a far more, even though there's obviously a lot of discontent, for the most part, the violence is far more subdued there. That is because the West Bank is more prosperous economically, just kind of one-on-one.
So let me ask you this. As you see this, David, just kind of your parting thought here. One of the things that that Professor Hutchinson expressed concern about, and it's legitimate, is in the past, the institutional structures have not been there to support the rule of law. We've had the abuse of the United Nations as the arbiter of where money went, making sure that the corruption is rooted out here. It was interesting that Mahmoud Abbas initially came out and completely rejected the plan, and an hour later had to issue a statement saying, I will go and return to the table, which tells me that he's listening to his populace who's saying, we want to give this a chance to work. But you've got to make sure the infrastructure of anti-corruption efforts are in place as well.
Look, corruption has been the bane of the Palestinian Authority. The corruption there is endemic. You know, obviously, the big question is whether that can be cured or if it's something that's so deep-seated that it's going to be impossible to manage. I mean, I would like to be optimistic, and I think it's certainly worth a shot. What concerns me the most, Jay, and perhaps the biggest risk here, is that, and what we've seen in the past, is if one does advance towards peace, what happens in parallel is that the forces who are dedicated to derailing the process and making it fail, they up their game, and then they up terrorism and et cetera and put pressure on the process. So we'll have to see what happens going forward, of course, assuming that eventually the Palestinians at least to some degree come aboard here. And of course, everything depends on what will be also the political settlement down the road. You know, one has to be careful about in the whole narrative here is that the Palestinians don't want to be perceived as having somehow been bought out. In other words, that they've somehow given up on their dignity or their aspirations for money. I mean, I don't think that is the case. That by no means the case. But at the moment, there are lots of voices on the Palestinian streets, sure, at least, or in the government, you know, making those kind of noises. We have to address that, I think.
This is how I think it's beaten back to UNRWA, which has been so scandal-ridden. The UN, yeah, a refugee and works agency, relief and works agency for Palestinian refugees. The same time that this is happening in Bahrain, they're meeting in New York. UNRWA is. And the aim is to raise $1.2 billion. That's nothing now.
Right.
The U.S. has got $50 billion on the table. So if you're a key partner in this, or if you're a businessman from the West Bank or Gaza or Egypt or Lebanon, or Jordan, you look at this, you say, okay, UNRWA is going to give $1.2 billion to spend on their own, you know?
Right.
The U.S. is putting together a plan where the Gulf states and the U.S. are going to come together and put $50 billion on the table. I think I'll go to that conference instead.
It's a very good way of saying it.
A very well-planned decision to do it on the exact same day. UNRWA, which we have said is just a horrible agency, yep, and full of corruption.
Bahrain is where you'd go.
Yes.
Okay, there you go, folks. All right, we're here for, I can't believe 30 minutes is gone. We're here for another 30 minutes. Facebook, Periscope, you know how to get it. If you're not getting the whole broadcast, go to aclj.org right now. Back with more in a moment.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.
From Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
The plan would invest about $50 billion in the region. It would create 1 million jobs in the West Bank and Gaza. It would take their unemployment rate from about 30% to single digits. It would reduce their poverty rate by half if it's implemented correctly. It's a 10-year plan. It would double their GDP.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
So the President, through his senior advisor, Jared Kushner, has introduced phase one of the Peace to Prosperity Plan. This is the economic portion of that plan. It talks about a $50 billion investment in the Palestinian authorities for roads, infrastructure, healthcare, schools, education, business, rule of law, governance. This is a comprehensive approach. You just had David Benjamin. Oh, look, we have a unique perspective here at the ACLJ because we have offices in the region. And we're in that region a lot. And we just had David Benjamin on, our senior counsel for the ACLJ, talking about why he thinks this is the right approach. Jordan brought up an interesting analogy at the end of the last segment of the broadcast. That is, the UN is having a meeting right now with UNRWA, which is the refugee organization of the UN, which has done nothing really to help the situation. Let's be honest here. And they're talking about raising $1.2 billion. You've got that meeting in New York, or do you go to Bahrain, where they're talking about $50 billion to revitalize both Gaza and the West Bank? And you initially had Mahmoud Abbas saying, I'm not going to negotiate. I will never negotiate with the United States on this. And then an hour later saying, I'm ready to go back to the table. Why? Because the people that live there actually want a better life for them and for their children. And if you could give that kind of hope, there's a better life for the children and your grandchildren, guess what? Hamas doesn't look so attractive. Hezbollah doesn't look so attractive. Living in a refugee camp doesn't look so attractive. You can actually get a home loan because you have a business or you're employed. And that's what we're talking about, a radical restructuring of the way life is in the Palestinian authorities. Eliminate the refugee camps. Return to a status where the people have some hope, and why not do it through an economic plan? And then you know what? They don't want to destroy Israel so quickly. That doesn't mean you get rid of Hamas goes, by the way, but they are less popular. And people start getting on the streets and saying, we don't want Hamas. In fact, the reason that Mahmoud Abbas came out and said what he did, and there's no question about it, was because the people are saying, you can't just turn down $50 billion.
Not even go and listen about it, which is what he was saying. Like, we're not even going to go listen. Because he's rich. He siphoned off plenty of money billions. From these U.S. Yeah,
sure.
Billions.
Hundreds of millions.
I think it's closer to billions. Usually it is with these guys. So for him, a plan that looks like, oh, it's not going to flow through me, his initial response is no. But obviously enough of his advisors and hearing from the streets in the West Bank said, you better rethink this no on this. Yeah, it may not be flowing through you, so you may not get your hands on this $50 billion to siphon off for your family. But you better go and have people there, the Palestinian businesses, go in. So what he did is two things. The Palestinian government is saying they're not participating. Palestinian businesses are. Israeli government is not participating. Israeli business people are. Then you've got the Gulf state countries participating and the U.S. government participating. So you have the real players, I think. By keeping the Palestinian government out, actually, I think is a good thing. And by keeping the Israeli government out, makes it easier to just talk about money to money, yep. Investment businessman to businessman, which they understand in the Gulf states and they understand in this region of the world.
Well,
and then that makes it easier than when you're dealing with nation state
yes.
issues.
So I think that's a good idea. But what Abbas has also agreed to, so he's to sit down back at the negotiating table. So this is actually a dual track.
Yep.
That the conference is going on, it's going to go off, and it looks like it will be a successful start, at least. And that Abbas has changed his mind on negotiating with the U.S. being involved in those negotiations.
We're going to get into this a lot in the next two segments. There's a lot to discuss here, but I think it's a really great start. It's out of the box thinking, but it's something we've been looking at, as Andy said. I mean, we've been talking about this. We've been meeting with Israeli leadership 10 years ago on this, including Shimon Peres. I mean, this is something that we have been talking about, water and hospitals and healthcare, a lot at the ACLJ. We put plans together that include this. We're very excited about where this plan can go. We're also excited that there's buy-in by the neighbors. That's very important. I'm going to take your calls when we come back from the break. 1-800-684-3110. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
About the Israel peace plan, the Israel-Palestinian peace plan, the economic development, but let's also talk about what just happened in Iran.
So President Trump today, just moments ago actually, signed an executive order issuing, quote, hard-hitting sanctions against Iran. Let's listen to President Trump in his own words.
Sanctions imposed through the executive order that I'm about to sign will deny the Supreme Leader and the Supreme Leader's office and those closely affiliated with him and the office access to key financial resources and support. The assets of Ayatollah Khomeini and his office will not be spared from the sanctions.
What? Let me go to Colonel Westmith. What does this mean?
Wow, that is so significant. That has not been done. The Supreme Leader is actually the power in Iran. He is also the one, the only one that the Iran Revolutionary Guard Corps answers to. He controls them. They're separate from the Iranian military. The fact that he is going to feel the pinch and the pain of this is very, very significant. What Iran is hoping to do is to get Europe and other nations to pressure the United States to ease the embargo and to ease the sanctions. Yep. And when you think about it, Jay, Germany and France have already cautioned the U.S. against doing this very thing. But Europe is in the appeasement hall of fame, as we all know.
Right.
They've never met a dictator or a moral evil person that they didn't want to appease somehow.
Right.
And they are cautioning the U.S. on this. This is bold. It is long overdue, yep. Jay.
Yeah, Calvin in California is actually calling about the Europeans and their potential for undermining these sanctions on Iran. So, Calvin, as we discuss this, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hi, Calvin.
Thank you. How is it that the European allies are undermining the U.S. sanctions with awarding contracts with Iran, such as France with auto, UK with telecom.
Yep.
Germany with oil. France with auto.
Yeah, so it's a great question. That is, are the Europeans going to go around the U.S. sanctioning regime in order to continue doing business with Iran? The thing is theirs, and they will not be doing business with the United States. Go ahead,
exactly.
Wes.
But it's rather disconcerting that the European countries have come together. They have formed a new entity called the Special Trade and Finance Instrument. This is a new group in Europe designed to help Iran evade U.S. sanctions. So the caller's concerns are legitimate. But again, as you said, they have a choice. They can do business with Iran or with us.
But you, Andy, when you talk about a special, as Wes just alluded to, this kind of special setup for an organization to figure out how to get around the sanctions, we've got a really tough State Department. We have a really tough Secretary of State and a president that's very tough. They're not going to go for this.
No, they're not. And thank God we have President Trump in office and Secretary Pompeo instead of the predecessor Kerry and those and the like of those. Look, the British have yet to learn the lesson of appeasement, it seems to me. They appeased Hitler during World War II, and look what it got them. It got them Munich and a period of peace, and then it got them the Second World War. You don't succeed by feeding an alligator in the hope that it will eat you last. That doesn't work that way, and that's exactly what they're doing with Iran here. They're feeding the alligator in the hope that it will eat them last, but in the ultimate analysis, their ultimate trade partner is the United States, and that's whose economic the way they have to ultimately go.
There's an interesting development on this, and that is the fact is when the president decided not to take military action, although, we went after their cybersecurity and things like that to Iran very successfully, he decided not to take military action. It's in part because the sanctions are having a dramatic and real effect on the Iranian economy, Harry.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's serious effect.
So the Iranian economy is cratering in part because unemployment is approaching 20%. The value of the currency is declining, and the ability of the Iranian government to evade sanctions is shrinking. And so I think these special purpose efforts, such as supporting trade exchanges and special purpose vehicles, which are set up to try to circumvent U.S. sanctions, should lead, and I hope will lead, to sanctions on European companies who cooperate, as well as European countries who cooperate. I also think that the president made a wise choice in bringing personal pressure to bear on the supreme leader and those that surround him. One of the important issues to keep in mind is that the supreme leader and the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, they have gotten rich over the last several decades at the expense of the American people. It is time for them to experience pain, and I hope that the pain continues as part of our maximum pressure campaign.
I actually think it's more aggressive to target the Ayatollahs specifically. It's something that's never been done before is being reported. So we've always given a pass. Like, kind of like, you can go after other officials, but you don't go after the head of state. Even when you're in conflict with him, to go after him directly so that he feels the pain, so that he can't keep filling up his kitchens with all the food he wants and the payoffs he does to stay in power and not get himself killed by his own people and by the people surrounding him to remain in power. If he starts losing those resources, to go after him, I think, is much stronger than hitting one Iranian military battalion and killing 100 regular Iranian soldiers. This is much tougher, going after the Ayatollah directly. No president has ever done it since the revolution in Iran in 1979. And I think what was interesting, too, this cyber attack that happened, so I think this is all much more coordinated than comes out in the media, is that while we had the plan to attack Iran and that one area, that which we all knew was the likely target, which was the missile group that hit the U.S. drone. At the same time, our cyber command took down all of Iran's radar and all of their military intelligence computers. So I think that was a message to Iran like this. At any moment, we can shut down all of your safety nets. You won't even know when the missile's coming at you. So you better be sure you know who you're dealing with. You're dealing with a country that can shut down your systems moments before. Maybe we will attack you. Maybe we won't. And that's now how Iranians have to live. And I think so that's a scary time to live in. And now the Ayatollah is being cut off financially.
That's a big deal. All right, let's go ahead and take this other phone call because Danielle's been holding a long time. This goes back to the situation in Israel.
Yeah, Danielle, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Thank you so much for taking my call. And I just thank you and your team for being courageous. We pray for you all. But
thank you.
I wanted to share something for you guys. I know a couple who are missionaries who go all around the world to minister to the poorest of poorers. They usually go to land, you know, garbage dumps and landmines. They're called Georgian and Winnie Banoff. So once a year, they take a trip annually to Bethlehem, which is located on the Palestinian state side. And when they leave the Israeli side, the Israeli soldiers say, hey, you know, once you cross over, we can't protect you. And what they do is they minister to hundreds of widows and orphans on the Bethlehem side, whose families have been specifically lied to by the terrorist organizations, Hezbollah and Hamas. And they tell their families, hey, if you, the husband, dies for us, if you die for our cause, we'll take care of your whole family when you're gone.
Right.
And which is a huge lie. So suddenly their children and their wives and everyone, their whole families are begging on the streets. They don't have any food, shelter, or clothing.
Yeah, it's horrible. I mean, I've been there. I've been to Bethlehem multiple times. I've been inside the refugee camps, and it's building a 70-year culture of poverty. And what this proposal does is a radicalization in a different way. Radical economic improvement, which is a lot better than radical terrorism. And that's the differential here. That these families will not say, I will go sacrifice my son to kill innocent Israelis so that we get some kind of pension when I could be instead running a business or teaching school or working at a hospital or having Andy economic improvement that actually gives my family an opportunity to exist.
Well, that's exactly right. I've been to Bethlehem too, Jay, and Bethlehem looks like a war zone. When you leave West Jerusalem, when you leave Jerusalem, the Israeli capital, and you go into the Palestinian territory, which is where Jerusalem is located, you look like you're going into a war zone. The buildings are crumbling, they're half built and so forth. So that is what the political allegiance to Abbas and his people have gotten them. The time has come now to look at things the realistic way, and that is economically. Give me a house, a hospital, a school, electricity, water, housing, food, roads, bridges, and sewers, and I will then live like a decent human being and not be a terrorist fighter who in the end is lied to by his people in terms of supporting his family. They're not going to support his family.
David Friedman, a friend of mine who's the ambassador from the United States to Israel, said this. Take a listen.
You can't make peace with a society with 70% unemployment or even 30% unemployment, because those relationships won't survive under that type of economic pressure.
And that's why this is such a unique approach to the entire problem. And I think this offers great, great hope. All right, we're coming to the last segment. We'll take your calls and comments. 1-800-684-3110. This hour's flown by. 1-800-684-3110. We'll take your calls and comments on this. And again, I think David Freeman's right. And then a 70% unemployment or even 30% unemployment, it's hard to make peace. You got 100% employment, guess what you get? Peace. I mean, is it that simple? Yes, but it's going to take a lot to get it done. But this is a heck of a step. No other administration has put something like this forward. No one has put something like this forward. It'll be very interesting to see what the political ramifications of all this are over the coming days. All right, we're taking a break. When we come back, we'll take your calls, 1-800-684-3110, and your comments at Facebook and Periscope. Back with more in a moment.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.
Play again what Ambassador David Friedman, a U.S. ambassador to Israel, said about unemployment and how you get a peace plan or how difficult it is if you have unemployment. And then let's talk about that because it's a very important point. Take a listen again.
You can't make peace with a society with 70% unemployment or even 30% unemployment because those relationships won't survive under that type of economic pressure.
70% unemployment or 30% unemployment, because in Gaza it's closer to 50%. In West Bank it's at least 30%. Some say it is 70% in Gaza. How true is that, Harry, that if you got this, how do you make peace when you've got that kind of unrest, that kind of economic depravity?
Well, I think it's extremely difficult because the existing economy provides a recipe for instability and it can fuel terror and violence. It's also important that this disparity, this lack of economic growth, provides fuel for United Nations initiatives. And one of the great things about this peace plan is that this undercuts the power and influence of the United Nations. The United Nations has essentially become an enemy of Israel. And I think this peace plan makes the United Nations, in terms of Middle East politics, increasingly irrelevant. That strengthens Israel in the long run.
And I think it actually leads to a better plan, a plan that people know. I mean, so it's interesting. I don't think it was any surprise or just a coincidence that, and this is from the news, that at the same time the Bahrain workshop is going on tomorrow, that the U.S. is backing with the Gulf states, with Egypt, with Lebanon, with Jordan, and the rest of the Gulf, to have these investors come in to raise, and it's important for our audience to know, to raise the $50 billion. Some of this will come in loans. Some of this will come in grants. So some will be given, some will be loaned, but it will not all be coming from the U.S. It'll be coming from our partners in the region as well to focus on those key areas we discussed already on the show. At the same time this workshop is occurring, the U.N. is holding its donor conference in New York with the aim of raising a total of $1.2 billion for UN Relief and Works Agency. That is just for the Palestinians. That is a specialized agency for Palestinian refugees. We've talked about it before on this broadcast, how corrupt UNRWA is. That's how you could say it. That event, again, just shows you the difference. $1.2 billion from a corrupt UN organization that has not ever been able to get it right. Okay, I mean, they have had years. And that money used to sound like a lot, probably, to the Palestinians. And then the U.S. under Donald Trump, when Jared Kushner announcing the plan, says, yeah, okay, UNRWA may be talking about how to raise $1.2 billion. We're going to raise $50 billion on the same day for you. So you choose
which conference you're going to.
Which conference you're going to, especially to the people. Have those people ever felt that UNRWA money? No. Go walk around and you'll see it has been misused. It's also not enough. Because when you're talking about Gaza and the West Bank populations combined, you're talking about 5 million people. Now, 5 million people, it's smaller than Israel, but it's a significant amount of people with horribly bad infrastructure. So you need a kind of surge of cash, surge of investment to change things radically. And you do that not by $1 billion a year that gets cut up under a bunch of different ways,
but you do it.
That's meaningless to the people because the people never
trickles down.
Look, they've been in refugee camps for 70 years. Wouldn't it be great to see that they could bulldoze the refugee camps because you don't need them anymore because people are actually living in
apartments,
and houses, and you have infrastructure and healthcare and roads. So I understand the Palestinian Authority government's initial reaction to this, but number three in this is the third initiative will enhance Palestinian governance. Improving the public sector's ability to serve its citizens, enable private sector growth. This initiative will support the public sector in undertaking improvements and reforms. And then it says a commitment to upholding property rights, improving the legal and regulatory framework for business, adopting a growth-oriented, enforceable tax structure, and developing robust capital markets will increase exports in both foreign and domestic, and also talks about a fair and independent judiciary. These are the kind of infrastructure that does not exist there right now that's going to have to come into existence. And that will serve the people very well if, in fact, that happens. And they're not going to get the money if it doesn't. So it's not $50 billion to the United Nations. And then, Andy, we hope we get courts.
Yes. I mean, it's really a visionary plan. And it's something that is really desperately needed. You've got to do the things that deal with the lives of the individual people. Give them the hospitals, as I said, the schools, electricity, water, housing, food, and things of this nature through private investment, and they will put down their arms. I do believe that, and I do believe it's a plan that is long in the making. I like the name of it, Peace to Prosperity. But it could be better have said peace through prosperity, because once you are prosperous, once you are employed, you are less likely to take up arms against your neighbor.
Well, if there's hope for you and your children, you have a tendency to want that governance to continue if it's working to the benefit of the people. But this is a radical redo of their existing structure, Harry.
Absolutely. And I think it's very, very important that it is designed to be organic. That is, it's designed to work through and for the people rather than through and for the government. Too often, United Nations programs have provided funding for the leadership of the Palestinian Authority and Hamas to get rich at the expense of their people. And I think this plan, this initiative is designed to do the opposite. That is a welcome change in focus, and I think it will have benefits for the entire populace in the Middle East, as well as advancing peace.
All right, let's go ahead. We've got interesting comments that have come in. People understand that this is a very different approach to this. But when you look at historically, let me put the historical perspective here. 70 years of what's happened has not worked. There's been brief times where you've had a couple of years of, you know, peace and a little bit of economic growth, but there's not been a long-term sustained effort to change the way of thinking, Wes, which is what's happening here.
Absolutely. You know, this is a whole new dynamic, a whole new paradigm that they're using. I think it's also serendipitous that this is going on, the new Iranian sanctions are going on, and this coming Friday and Saturday, the G20 meet in their summit, and I think this plan for peace to prosperity in Israel, in Palestine, the territories will be talked about as well as the Iranian sanctions. This is a very significant week on the world stage strategically.
It was interesting, though, that Mahmoud Abbas initially came back and said, no, I'm not going to even discuss it. I'm not going back to the table. Yeah, then the headline is, we are ready to return to the negotiating table.
Yeah, with the U.S., with the Trump administration, that recognized the first president
ever. He says, I will go
ever
to the White House and continue what I started with President Trump.
Yes, even though since he first made that visit, President Trump became the first president ever in U.S. history since being authorized by Congress. The first one to actually recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Remember, there were Supreme Court cases about whether you could put that down as your capital on your where you were born on your Israeli on your passport, a U.S. passport, and said that you were born in Jerusalem, Israel, and there were issues there that no longer an issue because the U.S. has recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. We even went so far as to recognize the Golan Heights. That's more about Syrians than it is Palestinians. But these were radical pro-Israel moves, radical changes from the past administration. And yet still, coming up with a radical new business plan for the Palestinian territories has got a group that was saying, nope, we'll never talk to you, Donald Trump, or your team, back to the table.
The truth of the matter is they are back to the table. Why are they back to the table? Because how do you turn down a potential of $50 billion worth of infrastructure, healthcare, education, business, economic reforms, governance reforms to people that desperately need it? They don't want to be living in refugee camps for 70 more years. So this gives some hope. This is Peace Plan Phase 1. This is only the economic aspect. There'll be more being rolled out in the months ahead. All right, that does it for the broadcast today. Support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. We'll talk to you next time.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member.